All right. All right. Let's talk about it then. Jehovah's Witnesses, what do you know about it? Well, let's talk about America. Let's go back to America, to the time of the beginning of Mormonism. You got a year for the Mormons? About what year, do you, in your mind, we spent all that time talking about Mormons. We did mention some dates. Early 1930s. 1927, I think, is when he got the plates. And it's about that same period of time that the Mormon religion started. But we got to understand what was happening in America at that time. Up in Pennsylvania, there were the Shakers. Anybody know what the Shakers did? And do you know the doctrine that they taught? They taught that it was wrong to get married. Now, here's a religion that, if you're a part of it, you cannot get married. How many generations do you think that religion would last? I mean, that's a realized... Judah and I were in Pennsylvania, I don't know, 20 years ago, and went by the place where, can't remember that woman's name, I used to know her name, it was sort of the head of the Shakers, and they still had a small congregation. I did either Google it or something to find out that there were still, a handful of Shakers left around. Now, they're not 100-year-old Shakers, but, I mean, there were still some who practiced that religion, and... there were some things happening in America. And if you'll think about American history, that's why it happened. When America was being colonized, the British churches is what they brought with them. I mean, you think about the people came, the Quakers came. What, they came out of Holland, did they not? And they came to America for religious freedom. And so... they didn't want the domination of the British churches and the persecution of anybody who was different from the, like the Puritans, who came to be able to practice what they believed in that situation. But the churches on the eastern seaboard were very British. And that's what, 1776? Now, you go to the end of that century, and now we get to the era of Daniel Boone. And now we got people coming across the mountains, and so they're settling in Ohio and parts of Pennsylvania and the western part of Pennsylvania and Indiana and Illinois and up in the Midwest that's there, and then Daniel Boone and the individuals who came, many of those who came, religious groups that came to Tennessee and Kentucky, came out of the Carolinas. And there were many, there were a lot of Baptists. In fact, the primitive Baptists claim their beginning in America in the Carolinas. And so whenever when they were being settled out in the West, that's what they brought with. But whenever you come across the mountains, you lose connection with church hierarchy. And you got to understand how there was developing in America on that frontier, and it's hard for us to think about Ohio and Illinois and Indiana and Kentucky and Tennessee being frontier, but that's what it was. And so it gave birth to all kinds of new religions. And that's why a religion as weird as the Mormon religion, with all of the peculiar things that they had, why it could take hold. Because people were very, very religious. And you go back to that time, and the Methodists and the Presbyterians that we know today were totally unlike the Presbyterians that came across, who believed in predestination. They were unbelievably religious. And so America was a land where people really believed the Bible, and so they were studying the Bible. And all of a sudden, a person would come along with some sort of personality, and he could develop a following pretty easily. And so you've got the Mormons in the 1830s, and then in the 1840s, you've got the Seventh-day Adventists. Now, it didn't start off as the Adventists. A religious leader by the name of Miller started teaching about the advent of Jesus. And so he was very adamant about the advent, meaning the second coming of Jesus. And so he did a lot of writings, and he was really powerful and convinced people in 1843 that the Lord was going to come back, and even named the date in 1844 when the Lord was going to return. And so those who were part of that movement literally dressed in white robes, bed sheets would be my guess, dressed in white robes and went to the mountaintops really expecting the Lord to come back. Don't know if you noticed it or not, but he didn't make it. And Miller said, well, I forgot about the year zero. And so it's really not going to be in 44, it's going to be in 45. And there was still a religious stir in religion. We sense that in Y2K. Is that what I want to say? You remember when the year 2000 came along and everybody thought that all the computers were going to crash, and there were many religious people who really thought the Lord was going to come back. And there was a stir in America, religious stir in America, that since one day with the Lord is as 1,000 years and 1,000 years is one day, and since the earth was created in 4,000 B.C., and then the year 2000 would have been 6,000, well, that's 6 days with the Lord, then the Lord's going to rest on the seventh day, the 7,000th year, which would have been the year 2000. And there were people really, really stirred up about that. And it happens, you know, the Jim Jones and things that happen in relationship to him and the stirring up of people. Now, you go back and put that in an atmosphere in America, and it is rather interesting that Charles Russell was greatly influenced by the teachings of the Adventist. Because, by the way, when William Miller fell by the way and lost the leadership of that, Ellen G. White became the leader of the Seventh-day Adventist. And her writings are looked upon as as being almost the very words of God. In fact, Ellen White went up to heaven. And just like Paul went to heaven, you remember Paul went to heaven and heard some things he wasn't allowed to tell everybody about it. But Ellen G. White made a trip to heaven, and whenever she got up to heaven, she saw the Ten Commandments, and there was a halo around the fourth commandment regarding the Sabbath. And was it Foy Wallace that said, God told Paul not to go back and tell everything he'd heard, but he knew better than to tell a woman not to go back. And so she came back, and she was allowed to tell everybody she'd seen up there in heaven. And seriously, I mean, they really believed her. I mean, Miller had convinced them, and she became the leader of that movement. And so she added the Seventh-day aspect to it. And so that, you know, that's in the 1840s, 1850s. And a fellow by the name of Charles Russell, and he was born in 1852, was enamored by the writings of Ellen G. White. So he started just a Bible study. And people started attending his Bible study. And so he finally decided to start his own religion. And so he brought over from the writings of Ellen G. White, brought over some of the teachings about death. You may not be aware of the Jehovah's Witness idea that a man does not have a soul and he's nothing but an animal. And so when he dies, there is no soul. And he's as dead as an animal, but the Lord is going to someday raise him up. And so you, in the teachings of the Jehovah's Witnesses, you don't exist. Because when you die, I remember the Jehovah's Witness I studied with in New Zealand talked about the fact, we believe that when you're dead, you're dead. But he did not say it that way. I mean, he was saying it to me, and I'll never forget the intonation of his voice. He said, we believe that when you're dead, you're dead, you're dead. Well, I believe when you're dead too. But see, we think that when you're dead, you're still alive. Well, it's the body without the spirit is dead. But to them, the spirit is nothing more than breath. And so when they read about a person about having a spirit, they'll say all that is just the air that you breathe in and out. And so when you die, you expire. And you breathe out. And that's what death is. You expire. And so there is no soul. And I find that rather interesting. I've never been to a Jehovah's Witness funeral. I would like to go to the Jehovah's Witness funeral to see what he said. I don't recall having. If you've been to one, tell me about it after class tonight, and just what they said about the other side. And the ultimate idea of that, by the way, is an idea about hell, and that is in their writings they'd say if you're going to kill an animal, you don't just torture it and torture it and torture it and torture it. And so whenever you go into hell, since hell is the second death, that when God throws you into hell, you're just going to burn up like a piece of bacon. And that's it. And I've always struggled in my own mind to figure out, what's the resurrection all about? I mean, you're a non-entity, and then there's a resurrection, and then you are a non-entity. I've never really fully understood where they are in relationship to their doctrine of the resurrection, other than the fact that during that 1,000 years, you'll have a chance, you know, to embrace the teachings, you know, that they had. But he started a group, and he finally decided to organize that group, and his church was chartered in 1874 as the Zion Watchtower Society. And I'm talking about Charles Russell is that individual who sort of came out of that spirit that was in America. And so he started this Bible study group and started doing a lot of publication. And so he published 7 volumes of book. Actually, he only wrote 6 of them, called The Divine Plan of the Ages. And so just like the Jehovah's Witness now, whenever they meet in their Bible studies, they pull out the Watchtower and study. You know, they study the Watchtower book far more than they study the Bible. And so that's what they started doing. And he had a really massive following because of the peculiar doctrines that they taught were something that were fascinated, and he really tried to use the Bible to prove all of these things. And if you've ever had a study with Jehovah's Witness, they'll have their Bibles open. They will be inside the Bible. It's rather ironic. The only verses they know are their verses. And you try to go to another verse and look at another verse, And they're clueless about what's involved in that, which says something about the very nature of their study. They're very grounded in looking at a particular passage, but to look at another passage, no ability at all really to analyze other passages in relation. Dave, you had a comment. Speak loud, Dave.
I think you have to also look at the situation. Is there, 10 years after the Civil War? So you've had all this killing and all this.
Yes. And a part, by the way, a part of what Russell did, because he had just come through the American Civil War, and that's what Dave just mentioned, is that government is evil. And I've got some quotations that I'll read to you, but we're going to run out of time before we get to all of them. But the name of that first book in the Divine Plan of the Ages was called The Millennial Dawn, D-A-W-N. In other words, there is the beginning of the millennium. And so it was his view that the Lord was about to come back. The 1,000-year reign of the Lord was about to happen. And so, in fact, he convinced everybody that it was going to happen 4 years later. And that would have been he started preaching in 88. Or pardon me, 84, it had been in 88 when the Lord was going to come back. And so he really had a lot of people stirred up about that. Now, a thing that has characterized the witness religion over and over again is setting the dates for the return of the Lord. And what I'd like to do is just to take a few minutes and read to you statements from the this divine plan of the ages. And so if you'll try to recognize that Russell was there and he started that church, and these books were being scattered all over America. It's called the Divine Plan of the Ages. And so in volume 2, he says, "We consider it an established truth that the final end of the kingdoms of this world and the full establishment of the kingdom of God will be accomplished at the end of A.D. 1914. Now, this is pretty good in the 1890s and could stir up a whole lot of interest, because 40 years from now, and it's rather interesting that they've worked a lot on this 40 years increment, that 40 years from now, the Lord, that there's going to be the establishment of the kingdom of God, and therefore you don't have to worry about civil government, because civil government is evil. And I try to read some of their comments about that. And so that's why they don't vote. That's why they will not pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, because they just cannot do it. Because government is satanic. Now, what does the Bible say about government? Submit yourself to the ordinances of man for the Lord's sake. And Romans chapter 14 and chapter 13 and verse 1 says, "He is the messenger ordained of God." But that's not the Jehovah's Witness view of it, is that government is satanic. It's not just bad. We don't just have bad government in Washington, that we have government that is satanic. And so there was a lot of persecution of witnesses back in the beginning, because there was a real spirit of Americanism at that time. But there were people who embraced what he said. He said, here's another statement. This is also from volume 2 of the Divine Plan of the Ages. "The present government must all be overturned about the close of A.D. 1914. And then he says, "And the battle of the great day of God Almighty," that's mentioned in the book of Revelation, "will end in 1914 with a complete overthrow of earth's present rulership." So it's coming to an end. And so you've got to understand how in that period of American history, people were really embracing what he said. And there is something, by the way, in the psyche of mankind that permeates our own society, which explains why in our own day people are so fascinated by Matthew 24 and by the book of Revelation, because they believe if you'll read those passages, you will have insight that nobody else on this earth has about the return of Jesus. And it happens again and again. We've mentioned the book that came out, 88 Reasons Why the Lord is Going to Come Back in 1988. I've had that book in my library. I think I still have that book. And people were really, really fascinated by it. And so the witnesses, more than any other people, have set the date for the return of the Lord. But what Russell did was saying that he's going to come back in 1888. And that was about 4 years after he started his church. And if I have time, I'll read you how he got around that, by the way. He found a Greek word and says, well, that's the way it's got to be. Here's another one. This also is from Volume 2. "The Gospel Age of Harvest will end October 1914, and the overthrown of Christendom, so-called, must be expected to immediately follow." By Christendom, he meant the established denominations there were in America, particularly the Roman Catholic Church, but other churches like Methodist and Presbyterian and others, that Christendom, in quotation marks, will be overthrown, and that so that by the end of 1914, there will be no more denominations. Because the Lord is going to come back and the millennium will begin. And so that the first book of Divine Plan of the Ages was called the Millennial Dawn, the Dawn of the Millennium. And so this is volume 2 of that Divine Plan of the Ages, and people were stirred up and embracing what he had to say. This is again from volume 2. Sometimes before the end of 1914, the last member of the divinely reorganized Church of Christ, the royal priesthood, the body of Christ, will be glorified with the head. And by that, their view was that when the millennium starts, the 144,000, that's who he's talking about whenever he says the divinely recognized Church of Christ, the royal priesthood, they're going to leave the earth. And so in 1914, all the 144,000 were going to go to heaven, and they were going to go to heaven where to be glorified with the head. Then it says, the reign of the heirs of the heavenly kingdom over the world can date only from 1914 when the time of the Gentiles has expired. And then again from that same publication, the time of the Gentiles will run fully out in the year 1914, and at that time, they will be overturned and Christ's kingdom fully established. And so they stated over and over and over again, the end is going to come in 1914. They published a book that was entitled, Millions Now Living Will Never Die. And I looked for years and years and years looking for a copy of that book. I don't know how many times, Dirk, I know you go sometime to Goodwill and and looked at books. I looked all over this world thinking that if I could ever find that book published about 1918 or something like, it could have been even published in 1914. But it says in that book that by the year 1925, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob will be raised from the dead. And the man that is 80 years of age will start becoming youth again, young again, and because there's only a physical body, then his old body will physically become like that body he had when he was just a young person. And I really, really believe that if I could ever find a copy of that book, that I'd be able to convert every Jehovah's Witness I ever met. I mean, here's the one that you followed. And I finally found one. And so I've got found it in New Zealand, and couldn't believe what I picked up when I had found it. And by the way, that book has been republished by some members of the Church of Christ have republished that book. But I've got an original copy of it. And the first time I saw Jehovah's Witness, they said, well, we learned better. We learned better. And so in 1907, this is what Charles Russell said. Let us suppose a case far from our expectation. Let us just imagine, and it's really not going to happen. It exceeds our ability to expect it to happen. Suppose that AD 1914 should pass with all the world's affair, all serene, and with evidence that the very elect have not been changed, and without the restoration of natural Israel to favor under the new covenant, what then? Would that not prove our chronology wrong? You know, if after 1914 the world does not end, would not that prove that we were wrong? And so in 1907 he says, yes, surely, exclamation point, well, in italics to emphasize it. And so in the Divine Plan of the Ages he says, be it distinctly noticed that if the chronology or any of these time periods be changed by even 1 year, the beauty and the force of the parallelism would thus be utterly destroyed. Well, you may not have noticed the Lord did not come back in 1914. And it is remarkable. But that's not the only date that they've set. And so about every 30 or 40 years, they will say the Lord is going to come back. We were in New Zealand about 1973, 74, I guess it was 74, And I'm studying with the Jehovah's Witness lady there. And she said, I would have given anything. She had two little girls. One was six and the other was a little bit older than that. Said, I would give anything if I had known before these children are born what I know now. That in 2 years, the tribulation is going to come. And my children are going to have to go through the worst tribulation there's ever been on this earth. And so they set the date, 1975, just not as emphatically as the words about 1914, but they've always set the date. And so whenever the Lord did not come back in 1975, how are you going to deal with divine chronology? And they said, oh, we forgot to add in the number of years Adam and Eve were in the garden before they sinned. And so I just don't know how long they were in there. When I read the book of Genesis, I read Adam and Eve, and I know human nature, how long would it have taken you to have eaten of the forbidden fruit? I mean, you know, it's been since 1975, that's how many, 25 plus 14, that's 39 years it's been. And so they were at least 39 years in there before Adam and Eve ate of the forbidden fruit. But now I want you to stop and think about a book that was published in 1914 to 1925, or before 1925. Millions now living will never die. How many people are on this earth that were alive in 1913? And don't raise your hand, okay? But just think about it. Millions now living will never die, and that's the name of that book. Where are those millions right now? You know, if you were alive in 1913, and if you were a man of 80 years of age in 1913, you know how old that makes you right now? And by the way, where's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? They're going to be raised, you know, by 1925, they're going to be raised. It is rather ironic that the witnesses, to protect themselves, I guess to protect themselves, published another Jehovah's Witness book, and guess what they named it? Millions Now Living Will Never Die. And it was to get away, and they published that later because people kept saying, well, didn't you teach this way back yonder? No, here's our book, Millions Now Living Will Never Die. And so it is rather ironic in relationship to that. Is it time to read the second veil, or should I go to one other thing? Well, this other thing, Jesus came, but nobody saw him in 1878. After this date passed away, nothing of special significance happened, so he compiled another set of figures and making use of the number 40 came up with 1914. So 70, I said 88, I think, should have said 78. So that's how he got to 1914. And so he was studying and he found that the Greek word for the appearing of the Lord means the presence of the Lord. And so the Lord didn't really come back in 1878. He just made his appearance. And by the way, the Adventists say, whenever they talk about William Miller and all of that, well, the Lord was supposed to. The Lord didn't really come back in 1844. He entered the heavenly sanctuary. I don't know that that's spoken of that clearly in the Bible. I can't think of entering the heavenly sanctuary mentioned at all in the Bible. That's it for tonight. We'll take up here and keep going on this. Thanks for your... And any comments you make about what you want to talk about, we'll talk about it in here.